From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, October 23rd, 2017. And on this day, we'll check in on the action or lack thereof in the legislature's special session today and both sides of the battle over rent regulation in Portland. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
State lawmakers are back in Augusta today for a one-day special session, but that day appears to be stretching into the evening and may be longer. Political correspondent Steve Missler's here to talk about what's happening at the Statehouse, or maybe more accurately, what is not happening at the Statehouse. Steve, it's my understanding that the lawmakers came back to resolve a few issues and appointments by Governor Paul LePage. Have they made any progress on those issues?
Some, and not much. The day started out with a bit of a wrench thrown into the whole process when Governor Paul LePage rescinded five judicial reappointments, and that sent the entire State House into a frenzy to figure out why he did that. And we never did get an answer to that, but he then withdrew rescinding of those appointments, so they actually went through. So there is some progress on that front, along with dozens of other appointments that he made to various boards and agencies. Also, on the positive news front, they seem to have the Senate and the House have agreed on fixing this first-in-the-nation food sovereignty bill, which had been flagged by the federal government for some issues that it could have affected inspections. And also, the House and the Senate have agreed, they haven't finally passed, but they have agreed to fix the funding for the GIS mapping agency within the state, which there was just a wording error that was discovered after they passed the budget. So that's the good news. The bad news is that lawmakers are still hung up on how to deal with two voter-approved laws that passed nearly a year ago.
And this is ranked choice voting and legal recreational marijuana, right? What's going on with those?
Yeah, it's both of those, although there is some breaking news on both fronts. One is that on ranked choice voting, after a lot of relitigating of the campaigns from a year ago, the Senate has voted, and now the House just barely did this, as agreed to go along with this, basically delaying implementation of the ranked choice voting law until 2021, and basically giving the next legislature the chance to pass a constitutional amendment which would allow that law, if voters approve it, to go into effect. If it doesn't go into effect, the law would be repealed, and that's not going to make very many of the advocates for ranked choice voting very happy. We'll see what happens with that. They had been talking about a people's veto of any bill that didn't implement or partially implement that law. And just now, the House has voted to kill Governor LePage's moratorium on implementing the recreational marijuana law. That was an 85-53 vote. The Senate has not yet done that. And I guess the big question now is whether or not the two bodies can agree to pass implementing a bill that had been worked on for the past 9 months that the governor opposes and some Republicans oppose to implement the regulatory structure for legal marijuana that would allow the state to tax it and test it and regulate it.
Remind me of how the state legislature can decide to repeal or not implement a voter-approved law.
So that once the law is approved by voters, the legislature has a lot of power to amend those laws or to not implement them or to repeal them. They can do that. Sometimes they do that at their peril. There might be a political or electoral consequence for doing that. But this past legislative session has proven anything. It's proven that lawmakers are willing to take that risk, either to repeal, not implement, or just ignore certain voter-approved laws.
It seems like they have been debating a lot of these things since January. Why has there been so little progress?
Well, politics, different agendas, and of course, the 2018 elections. Next year is a gubernatorial election. There's also a big Senate race in the 2nd Congressional District. And a lot of people in the state house or state lawmakers are running for those positions. So there's a lot of angling for what's the best way forward in terms of their own electoral prospects next year. That's part of it. And I think, you know, there's just a lot of because of the House is divided with a Democratic-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate, they're just at odds of a lot of things. So what you're seeing is divided government at work.
All right. Political correspondent Steve Missler with a brief update from Augusta. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Nora.
And to be clear, additional votes will be needed on both the ranked choice voting measure and marijuana legislation. The legislators are expected to work into the evening. And now in the world of local politics, after almost a decade of red-hot growth, rents in Portland may have reached a plateau. But it's a high plateau, and a ballot question before local voters next month would limit rent hikes and create an oversight board dominated by tenants. There is a well-financed opposition campaign by landlords and, maybe less intuitively, some affordable housing groups. Fred Bever has more.
Winston Lumpkins was 21 when he arrived in Portland almost 5 years ago with a dream of making it in the city's charismatic culinary scene. He got an $11-an-hour baking job and hopped through a series of rooms rented in city apartments, chased from one to the next, he says, by rent hikes of 10% or more every 6 months.
So that was frustrating, especially because it feels, when you live in Portland, like the food industry here is the lifeblood of the city.
Lumpkins turned out last week for a public forum in the city's Munjoy Hill neighborhood, a mix of single-family homes, three-deckers, and increasingly boxy condos. A real estate tidal wave has pushed rents up here by some 40% in 5 years, leading a trend that washed over the entire city and then spilled over to neighboring communities.
And what I've seen with visiting friends living in this city in multiple units owned by multiple landlords of around this scale, like 9 to 15 units, is that they don't fix anything. They raise it to reach market, and the building slowly collapses, which concerns me as like someone who really does want to make my career here.
Lumpkins is supporting a ballot item pushed by a group called Fair Rent Portland. Broadly speaking, it would limit rent hikes by landlords who own six or more units under a formula tied to hikes in property tax rates and inflation. Landlords who've improved a unit could petition for more with a hard cap of 10%. Those decisions would be made by a new 7-member board, 4 of them tenants. Landlords are fighting back hard. They say they cannot afford to improve Portland's aging housing stock without being able to recoup their investments.
I own 30 units. I don't take one penny out of the buildings I own. They're retirement.
Britt Vitalius is the director of the Southern Maine Landlords Association, and he's spearheading a $140,000 campaign against the rent limit proposal.
I work very hard to make my buildings habitable. Many were not particularly habitable when I bought them.
And the commercial landlords have what may be some unexpected allies in opposing the ballot question, the leaders of several affordable housing initiatives. Dana Topman is the CEO of Avesta Housing, which operates some 800 subsidized housing units in Portland. He sees the proposal mainly benefiting people who can, in fact, afford higher rents.
I think there'll be a tendency for higher income people to get the units and stay there and not ever move because they got a good deal. And that's going to sort of push out lower income people. So there won't be the turnover that you normally would have.
But supporters of the rent limits campaign say that while it won't stop the process of gentrification, it would slow it down.
Over time, like, rents are going to rise, and there's very little this can do to stop it. However, what it can do is make sure that that's going to happen on a time scale that makes sense for tenants rather than for profits.
Jack O'Brien is a Bowdoin statistician and a leader in the rent limits campaign. He argues that the Portland proposal is far from rent control and that it includes some fail-safe mechanisms to avert sudden changes in the city's marketplace. He says it exempts buildings constructed this year and after, for instance, to thaw any potential chill on financing for construction of new units. It exempts subsidized housing and smaller landlords who live in their buildings from most of its strictures. And it sunsets in 7 years. The ordinance will still affect about 18,000 units. O'Brien says that will assure a supply of housing for workers who are critical to the city's future.
Portland has a really unique small business economy. It has the highest rate of small businesses in any city in the country. Those businesses rely on long-term workers being able to have stable housing near to them.
Some observers say there's a lot more in play in the debate than the profit motive alone, and there's an important underlying factor. People who can afford higher rents want to live in Portland. Richard Barringer is former director of the University of Southern Maine's Muskie School and lead author of the just-released Greater Portland Tomorrow. It's a document that outlines the present city's challenges and opportunities.
Portland, Maine, is enjoying perhaps its greatest prosperity since before the Civil War.
Barringer says that at the end of the Great Recession, aging baby boomers and millennials are looking for new urban options away from super expensive Boston and New York. Big companies like WEX and IDEX are establishing new white-collar opportunities, and foodie entrepreneurs are creating entry-level jobs. Plus, says Barringer, the Portland area has a stock of rundown and momentarily cheap housing stock with potential.
This is the way cities grow. It's that simple, truly. And you have to allow for the recreation of a city over time.
Back on Munjoy Hill, Lely Johnson has watched that recreation in real time.
This was a forgotten street.
She bought her house here 20 years ago with the help of a federal program that targeted low-income workers for home ownership in marginal neighborhoods.
There was nothing. This was a two-tone asphalt house with duct tape on the broken windows, and it was infested with fleas. I loved it because it got sun all day long.
Johnson rents two units in her building and recently took part ownership of four more next door. As with many landlords, large and small, her biggest concern about the rent limit proposal is that it would create new rules for evictions that could extend timelines for getting rid of a destructive tenant.
If we have a bad tenant and we can't get rid of them because of this board, we'll lose all the good tenants. They'll leave.
The fate of the proposal could hinge on who exactly turns out in this off-year election. Landlords have some relatively big campaign money to work with. But supporters are hoping they have one clear advantage. More than 60% of city voters are renters. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, October 23rd, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.